Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 23rd of September, recording at 9:37 p.m., and that's still summertime. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick review of what's happened this week. And well, it's been pretty brutal in stock markets. Big falls. This time the ASEAN sector has finally capitulated, but many of the bigger falls were elsewhere, and no stock market has come away unscathed. The Asians were all down. They were down a little bit less today for the most part, but gains of 1.5-2% remain. Losses, I should say, Freudian slip. Losses of 1.5-2% remain commonplace. European markets, despite all the Eurozone crisis focus, have actually done a little bit better than on a relative basis. They did fall back, and they have tested their early August lows, and in some instances eased a bit further down. They also rallied in here today, but modest gains across the boards, a little bit of short covering. In the Americas, big hits, again, reversing much of last week's gains for a number of these indices, although in the United States we're still getting relative outperformance, and the NASDAQ in particular has really held up quite well today and fell down at one stage today. I'm looking at the futures, December futures contract now. At one stage, it fell down today to 21.34, but closed at 22.02. And the S&P, having been quite weak at one stage, got down the futures contract now for December, got down to 1102, but closed at 11.29.80, and the spot S&P closed at 11.36, so just holding in that August low region, broke slightly below it, but not maintaining it. Other actions on the week. Long-dated government bond prices soared before running into some profit-taking here today. The U.S. 30-year bond future, for instance, has closed 2.5 points nearly off its high of the day. And a number of these look overextended after these huge gains, but they are still in overall upward trends. More on them in a moment, including the now infamous Operation Twist. And in currencies, we've seen dollar strength. We've also seen yen strength, although it gave up a little bit of that in here today, and the dollar gave up a little bit of its gains in here today. We've seen big falls in the commodity currencies and also in the emerging market, or what I prefer to call the growth economy currencies. More on that in a moment. And in precious metals, it's been a bloodbath there too. One of the sharpest declines in a very long time. Here, silver, for instance, plunged today, got down to 29.84 before closing out. That may still be trading, actually still trading after hours, Silver's at 31.17. That's down $5.4. And gold dropped down to 16.29. Currently, it's at 16.53. Yep, 16.53. And we're currently down nearly $100 on platinum at 16.11. Palladium down 27 to 636.80. Crude oil's fallen back quite sharply. I think we're down to 102 on the Brent. I might just check that. No, I'm sorry about that. But it is down to below just below 104, 103.94. And the WTI crude is at 80. And last, rounding out on these reviews, the industrial metals were hit quite hard in here today, and or throughout the week. Tin was an exception today, closing a little bit higher. The agricultural commodities were hit very hard. It's been a huge sell-off in the last 3 days in commodity markets. And today I think we had cotton and wheat and one other commodity, which I can't remember at the moment, had modest gains in here. But it's been a big sell-off this week. Okay, so what do we make of all this and where are we going? Well, first, two words, global deleveraging, pretty well sum it all up. And people have taken profits in stock markets or cut losses. The bond indices, and incidentally, Owen has a fabulous review of global bond shares and indices here today. They have been leading to the downside in the West and in Japan and also in China for quite some time. There have been some standout exceptions. Canadian bonds were very firm until recently, as were ASEAN country bonds until very recently. But we have seen some capitulation in the last week or so as people cut positions and in bear markets. And lest anyone is in any doubt, this is certainly behaving like a bear market. It's just a matter of degree, but the financials are still leading to the downside. That's bad news. And the problem is that banks are still suspect in the United States, but the real focus, as you know, is on Europe. And that has spooked investors in other bond markets as well. So you really could say that it will be difficult to trust. Well, we at Fuller Money will find it difficult to trust stock market recoveries until we see a bit of upside leadership from banks. And right now, there's no evidence that these have really hit lows. Some of the declines look somewhat overextended, but they're orderly for the most part. And therefore, this is still a dangerous environment in here. Now, in terms of valuations, the one good thing about this, and we don't get more bearish as markets go lower, because for the obvious point that valuations improve, all those old adages, you know, buy when there's blood in the streets and when everybody else is selling, you ought to be buying, and so all those things are really quite true. But again, it's catch a falling knife territory unless we really are near in a final climactic phase. And it would be premature to say that we are in a final climactic phase. We had a climactic phase in August. We had a modest bounce for many indices, a good bounce for the NASDAQ. But these markets, but these markets are still in overall downward trends. So again, I think one wants to be a little bit cautious, but it is a good time to be lining up your favorite candidates. And the lower markets go, favorite candidates in terms of the next round of buys, and the lower markets go in here, the more choice that you will actually have. The ones that interest me the most are the high yielders. They haven't come down as much as I was hoping for, but they may do so here before we get to a meaningful low in these markets. The valuations are better in the growth markets now than in the developed markets. You go back to last November or the beginning of this year, and it was the other way around. The valuations were better in the Western markets than in the growth markets. So that's been reversed. And that excites us because we like those Asian-led growth economies, and we like the resources economies. And markets in those countries are suffering in here right now, which is creating improved valuations. And there are a lot of very attractive yields. Some of those yields will get pared back, as we know. Depends on really how weak the global economy actually becomes. You certainly can say, or I will I'll speak for myself. I will certainly say that long-dated government bond yields at these levels, even with the help of quantitative easing, are discounting a recession. Is that an overshoot? Well, remains to be seen, but obviously the Western economies are very, very close to recession overall. And some of these bond yields, I beg your pardon, some of these equity yields, which are much, much more attractive than the government bond yields, some of these corporate yields will be squeezed here. For instance, commodity companies, you get a fine copper mine, mining company like Antofagasta, which mainly produces its copper in Chile. It's currently yielding about 7.5%, but that's based on the copper price, and the copper price has been heading south fast in here. It's fallen from 450 down to 331. So that yield is vulnerable. What about the big oils? Less so. And there are a lot of dividend aristocrats that are very likely to not only see their yields hold, but to increase those yields. So this is a time to be looking at companies of that sort and lining up the ones that interest you the most overall, but we don't need to rush in yet. Some subscribers have sufficiently large funds to manage that liquidity is a major issue, and they need to start a little early. And people in those positions, I think, really ought to be nibbling here on weakness. Private investors such as myself, well, you may wish to hold off a little longer. But as I say, to repeat this point, we don't get more bearish the lower these markets go, even though it gets more frightening as they go down. But most of you, I think virtually all of you, we've been through this before. And it's never pleasant. It's hard on the nerves. Bear markets cost us one way or another. But the great profits are made by buying in down markets, and the great profits are taken in up markets. And we do want to really bear that very much in mind. Okay. Now, what about these long-dated government bond prices? Well, no one's more astonished than I am that the bond prices have gone so high and that the yields have actually gone so low. They don't represent value unless you're absolutely convinced that Japan, and I've said this on many occasions, but unless you're absolutely convinced that we are going the Japan route. Now, with central banks willing inflation, Bernanke based his whole career on being an expert on how to avoid sliding into deflation. This test case may provide his comeuppance, but I wouldn't bet on it yet. There's still lots more money printing that they can do and will do. And let's take this operation twist. Incidentally, I think this is a mistake, and I think he's lost touch a little bit in terms of the law of unintended consequences. I mentioned this in August when Bernanke came out and said that if necessary, that interest rates would remain unchanged. This is short-term interest rates would remain unchanged until mid-2013. Well, you know what happened. Stock markets tanked and bond prices actually soared because people said, OMG, stands for oh my god, of course. They're saying the situation is much worse than we thought. And of course, that makes businesses more cautious and it makes consumers more cautious, and understandably so. Now, what does this Operation Twist do? You know, what's he talking about? $400 billion of three-year paper or less, and they will either sell that or let it expire and put the money into longer-term issues. Now, what that does is lowers the yield curve, and that is a component in the U.S. leading economic indicators, and the lower that goes, the more it signals recession. I think it's about about 1.5% right now. But if those long-dated bond yields were to continue coming down and those short-term yields to nudge up, that historically has been a very important indicator of recession. Now, Bernanke has gone in for the Operation Twist because there are still a lot of mortgage refinancings going on, and it helps to keep those longer-term mortgages down. Well, okay, but it creates problems elsewhere. Now, the much-loathed banks, it makes it harder for them to play the yield curve because the money they're borrowing from the Fed costs a little bit more, and they get a little bit less return in the high yield. And then in Europe, we had that absurdity. I don't think it'll be passed into law, where you might remember a couple of months ago that Sarkozy and Merkel agreed to put a transaction tax on the banks. Well, nobody likes banks. Why should we? But when they're absolutely reeling and having to be rescued, you don't hit them with a tax. That's not only gratuitous, but it's not in anybody's long-term interests because it just prolongs a financial crisis. So this is still a very tricky situation here. And the European area, this focal point of global concerns now for a number of months, got 17 countries. It's hard to sort out leadership and policies, needless to say, but they're under a lot of pressure to speed up the process, and they are sort of doing so. They'll get there in the end, I suspect. Whether Greece gets thrown out of the euro or not will remain to be seen. But Again, this is another reason to be cautious in here over the over the short term. Now, what about precious metals? Gold, regarded as the great preservative of wealth over time, which it certainly is and has been for centuries, and it's had a majestic performance, but it did get overextended. It became as overextended as it has in any other time, and this is in percentage terms, and Owen and I have written about this, became more overextended, or I beg your pardon, it became as overextended as any earlier time in this secular bull market to date, which commenced really back in about 2001. So we've been talking about how that was due and would actually benefit from some mean reversion towards the rising 200-day moving average. Now, that mean reversion can take place in two ways. It can be a sort of a sideways ranging affair, or it can come down with a thump, the way silver did when it had accelerated up to $50. Well, gold has come down with a thump this week, and that frightens people a little bit more. And therefore, it's still above its rising 200-day moving average. Most of the mean reversion has been completed, but I would say, given the nature of the price activity, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that gold could break its rising 200-day moving average for a while. For a while. Now, we haven't seen that since 2008. I'll repeat that I see no evidence that the secular bull market is over, and I'll repeat that I think that it will be higher interest rates that eventually end that secular bull market. We've had higher interest rates in the growth economies, but certainly not in the West, and I was thinking of higher global short-term interest rates, not just the Asian-led growth economies. And I think those interest rates in the growth economies will be coming down, and really quite soon. They need to, incidentally. That, to me, would be one of the most important changes that we would get, signaling that it was time to definitely be moving into stock markets, at least in terms of the fuller money themes. But again, to go back to the precious metals, the sharp declines that we've seen in here are clear evidence of capitulation. That's been a risk. It's been mentioned a number of times in these audios that if stock markets fell too sharply, if investors became too frightened, that we would see capitulation. And you only had to look back as far as 2008 to see how that happened and how that can happen. Our view at Fuller Money is that, that while no market is immune to capitulation selling, that as the dust settles and markets begin to recover, I would not be surprised if precious metals were at the forefront, and that would include their mining shares as well, as we also saw in 4Q 2008 and in 2009. Okay, what about these other commodities, such as copper? Well, and crude oil, most important of all. Brent is still at $104, but at least it's coming down. And the WTI is down to $80, and there's no sign, no evidence yet that these contracts have reached their lows for this corrective phase. I think commodities are likely to fall a little bit further in this global deleveraging process. And that's the reset that we've talked about on a number of occasions that I think it is necessary, particularly for Asia. Asia with its which is not going to experience more than a growth recession, in other words, a lower rate of growth, in my opinion, but they're not going to move away from their restrictive monetary policies, let alone press the monetary accelerator, without stimulus programs, while commodity price inflation is staring them in the face. So the best thing that can happen in terms of those countries is to see the lower commodity prices. And I will be watching for, as I mentioned this before, I'll be watching for a change in monetary policies in Asia as a very positive development here for all stock markets. And the big successful multinational companies that we like quite a bit would certainly be responsive to that development, and it will happen, but I don't know whether it's going to be next week or a month or two down the road. Nobody does, not even the policymakers in those countries. Okay, I don't want to run on too long. Just a little bit on currencies here. On this dollar strength, to sum it up overall, you could say that a lot of Forex traders had been building up their carry trades by being short the dollar, and they'd been doing that for a couple of years. Now, those positions are being reversed for the most part, and that's causing some very sharp downward moves in some of the growth economy currencies. Now, that's good news for people who are looking to buy into those markets, because as their currencies weaken, you'll be able to buy a little bit more in those markets. And as growth, global GDP growth picks up at some point next year, if not sooner, then I would expect to see those growth economy currencies anticipate that and start strengthening once again as well. But at the moment, what we're seeing is, as part of this massive deleveraging, is the selling of those currencies and the buying of U.S. dollars. I think it's more unwinding those dollar carry trade positions than safe haven buying, but there's some of the safe haven buying in the dollar as well. And that's pretty much it. I apologize for the length of this audio, but it's been a dramatic week, to put it mildly. So let's have a restful weekend. All the best.